Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. How we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. We got our resident college baseball expert on the line again today, Mr. Jonathan Grasse. Good to have you again.
Expert's a loose, definitely a loose term, but I appreciate you guys having me on. I love Chopper.
Extraordinary college baseball fan, would that be?
Yes, that's fair.
All right. We're going to take some time. We're what, entering week five of the season here, coming up this weekend. ACC open conference play. Pretty much everybody else is open in conference play this weekend. Some other conferences started conference play this week as well. I attended a MAC showdown between Marist and Merrimack later this weekend. But we're kind of rolling. And it's kind of wild to think, but we're creeping up on the quarter mark here of the season. And I think there's some interesting conversations to be had about some teams in terms of teams that have kind of held serve, teams that might be struggling a little bit, some surprises. And I know we got some thoughts among this group. So, Jonathan, you got any kind of opening statements, anything you want to lead with here?
Yeah, I think the SEC is kind of flexed their muscles a little bit. LSU, Arkansas, Tennessee, you know, really showed Florida, you know, as well, have really showed, you know, they're kind of the cream of the crop. I think for me, that there's two like big points. I think one thing we're seeing is that a lot of these like Power Four conferences have really flexed their muscles in terms of the records. And I know we'll hit on this here in a couple seconds in terms of some of the schools that we weren't expecting to be as good as they are. But I think that's a big part of the transfer portal, that a lot of these schools that have gone out have gotten, you know, basically taken mid-major players, you know, from some other Division One, Division Two schools, have really flexed their muscles. And I think some of the lower conferences, I think you're looking at some of these records and you're shocked because there's just such a bad, you know, record for so many teams in that league, that I think it's really starting to show like there are schools that have what they need and kind of the haves, and there's also the have-nots. And that's been my biggest takeaway so far is that, like, you know, in years past, you've seen, you know, some schools go to some mid-majors and some lower tier, you know, mid-major schools go to places and win games where, you know, some of these teams are, you know, they're playing seven inning games four times because they're run rolling teams, you know, every time. So I think that's one of the things that I kind of noticed is like some of the scores, the discrepancy of, you know, who has a lot, the power schools, and then who doesn't. It seems like it's a little bit bigger now than it's been in years past.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when these teams get into conference play. Like, are they able to kind of rebound and what that level of competition is going to look like? But it's certainly been interesting to see how the transfer portal, like, this is the first year I think that it's like fully intact in terms of seeing guys really move around. Like, obviously we had some action last year, but I think this year you were seeing more Division One guys move. And I think you're starting to see some of that play out. Like, one of the guys that comes to mind is like Ethan Conrad at Wake Forest, you know, stepping in, you know, going from the MAC to the ACC, and he's hitting in the three hole for those guys, and he's looked every bit the part. And he's not the only one who's made that kind of move, and it's had a pretty significant impact at kind of the highest level of college baseball. Coach Glass, what do you got? Any opening thoughts in the first month of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Jonathan said is probably one of the bigger shocking things to me of looking at some of the overall records of your Power Four conferences. I mean, the Big 12 has one team who's sub 500 out of, I think they have 16 or 17 schools. You know, the SEC has nobody under 500. And the ACC is around the same, is pretty much in the same boat where there's, you know, I think there's one team in the ACC, in Cal, when I was looking earlier, that is sub 500. You know, so across the Big 12, the SEC and the ACC, you're talking about, you know, 40 plus teams with over 500 records, which I think is something that we haven't necessarily seen. Now, you know, we could go into the RPIs and strength of schedule and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you know, being having 14, 15, 16 wins, you know, Tennessee's undefeated still, and Florida State's undefeated still. You know, Oregon is playing, you know, they're showing up and showing out in the vaunted Big Ten of Oregon. You know, they're 14-2 overall. You know, they did take a bad loss early, but, you know, they went and swept this weekend. You know, I think it's getting to kind of what we've talked about on here before, the haves and the have nots. And I think, you know, the haves in these, you know, specifically those three and some of the, you know, a good portion of the Big Ten are kind of flexing their muscles of like what we have and what we can do. And, you know, I do think the transfer portal is a big player in this. And that's why you're kind of seeing, you know, conferences like the MAC and the CAA and some of these other conferences that, you know, traditionally have, you know, pretty strong baseball programs, not necessarily having the best starts to years, because I, you know, you can probably go across those rosters and see that they got gutted from a transfer portal standpoint. And that's kind of why they are where they are now. So, you know, that's a conversation for a different day with where, you know, we see that going in the future. But for the time being, I think some of these schools are positioning themselves in a spot to really get the guys that can really help them win immediately from a transfer portal standpoint, and then bolstering it with high school guys and just being really good. I'm obviously interested to see, and we'll get into this tonight, like what conference play looks like with all these teams, because it's going to be a bloodbath on a good portion of weekends for the next 10 weeks to kind of see how it shakes out from a conference standpoint.
Yeah, well said. Who are some of the teams that you guys have identified, like kind of some surprises that you think have played really well early on in the season that may not have been on everybody's radar? I know I got a couple, but what do you got there, Jonathan? Anybody that sticks out that were a little bit surprised at how they've started this off?
Yeah, I think Stanford going across the country this weekend is a huge deal. You know, opening ACC, you know, going to North Carolina. North Carolina was, I think, fourth on most people's rankings, fourth, fifth, somewhere in that range. Going to North Carolina across the country. We talked about it a few weeks ago. You know, what does that look like? You know, going from west to east. I think that I still believe it's going to be tougher. Those West Coast teams, for them to do that, though, I think that was super impressive. Two in a Big 12. I know West Virginia hasn't played the toughest schedule, but, you know, you win the games that you're scheduled. They're 14-1, like, and they played all their games on the road, I think, outside of one. So I'm impressed with them. I think they've done a nice job. Kansas is another one that comes to mind. He's done a phenomenal job, Coach Fitzpatrick. He's really, really, really good at his job. Did a great job at Dallas Baptist. Goes up to Kansas. They turn that thing around in a hurry. You know, that's another one. And I think those are the biggest ones. The other one, the other, and I think it's not actually a team, but I think the conference, I think just the Sun Belt, just with Troy, with some of those other coastal teams that have always been good. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying that they've never been good, but they've always been good. But just them flexing their muscles, and again, when a lot of mid-major, you know, conferences, in my opinion, have struggled a lot, the Sun Belt just seems like they are accelerating like those Power Fours are. And I think that's been one thing that I think has been really cool, is I think the Sun Belt's going to be a You know, and I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but, you know, that's a 3-4 bid league, which it's a big deal. You know, I mean, that's a huge deal, you know, for a mid-major conference to have that many teams that are going to be in the mix at the end. I think that's been, those are kind of the hotbeds that I've said that, you know, have been pretty cool surprises.
Anybody jump off the page for you, Coach Glass?
I think Jonathan took some of the ones that I had thought of. But I think two other ones that surprise, well, one surprises me, one not so much because I talked about it a couple weeks ago, but I think Penn State's off to a really good start. They're 11-2. You know, and they're playing a bunch of games on the road and neutral. You know, I do think they've played a handful of games at home, but a good portion of their schedule thus far, I think 9 or 10 of their games have been either away or neutral of the 13 or so that they played. So them out to an 11-2 start, I think is pretty good. The other one that surprised me out of the Big 12 is Baylor. You know, they're off to a 12-3 start. You know, they've been down the last couple of years, you know, but they have history. I know you talked about it the last time we did this a couple of weeks ago, Andy, that it wouldn't shock you if they had a decent year. You know, but I think seeing them get off to a 12-3 start, you know, that wasn't necessarily on my bingo card. I certainly thought they were going to be a little bit better this year than they have been in years past. But a 12-3 start, and, you know, in most years, you're probably sitting atop the Big 12. But this year you have Kansas and West Virginia at 14-1, respectively, for both of them, you know, two wins ahead of them. So, you know, I think from a good standpoint, those are probably the two that I was pleasantly surprised to see Penn State do it. And I think Baylor for me in the Big 12, I mean, we'll probably get into the teams that are a little disappointing right now, but for positive surprises, those are the two that stick out to me.
Yeah, I got a couple of those on my list here as well. Stanford, I just like you said, Jonathan, going across the country and winning at UNC, it's a tough place to win no matter how good you are. Like, I thought that was a statement win for them. First ACC series, you know, very impressive win there, especially against a UNC team that has been able to really pitch. Like, the depth on that staff is pretty insane. The amount of guys that they're able to run out there with just premium stuff and the experience that they have, was impressed with that. I think Oklahoma's one. I don't know if they're a huge surprise, but I don't believe that they were kind of slotted in the top 25 to start the year. And I know we mentioned them early as somebody that we thought might be able to kind of be a quote unquote sleeper to get to the World Series, despite how good they've been. I think they're 14-1. They've beaten some really good teams. Baylor, they're only two of their three losses are to Auburn and Oregon State. And those were tight games. I think they lost to Oregon State 4-3, and I think they lost to Auburn 7-4. Good to see Baylor back. Like you said, they've had a ton of success in the past, College World Series appearances. So having them back is good. And then I'm going to highlight a Northeast team that I think has been pretty impressive. And some of their series wins might not be as, you know, they didn't beat any SEC teams or anything like that, but Fairfield 8-4, you know, kind of a small mid-major up in the Northeast. They've been really good in the last 4 or 5 years, have kind of dominated the MAC for the most part. But I mean, they went down, won a series at Gulf Coast. They won a series at JMU, who was a regional team last year, Sun Belt team, you know, and they put it on GW. Anytime you travel that much to open the season, it's always difficult. To see them at 8-4, I think that the teams in the MAC are going to have a tough time figuring out how to beat those guys consistently on a week in and week out basis. I had a chance to watch them a little bit too. Like, they can play. That's a good ball club, and I like that. And then, Jonathan, you mentioned Kansas and West Virginia. I'm really interested. I think you're going to find out how good they are in the next couple weeks. You know, they're going to open up Big 12 conference play. Obviously, West Virginia was a super regional team last year, and we kind of highlighted Kansas as a team that had a chance to, you know, see a pretty big uptick in wins this year. But they haven't really played anybody. You do highlight that West Virginia's been on the road the whole season, which I think can't be understated. It's always hard to travel and go win games. But I'm really interested to see how they shake out here the first couple weekends of the Big 12. And then, you know, Alabama is another one for me. we're going to find out how good they are in the next couple of weeks. We know the SEC is a gauntlet. They've been 14-1. They actually lost their first game yesterday against Presbyterian. Presbyterian was able to put some runs up on Sunday against their bullpen. But I think we're going to find out how good that Alabama team is. They got that shortstop there who's just absolutely murdering baseballs right now, and it looks like Rob Vaughn's got Alabama back in the mix. But I'll be really interested to see how they shake out in SEC play here in the next couple of weeks. What do we got? Some teams that disappointed you? I think we probably all have a very similar list here. But, Jonathan, what do you got? A couple teams that jump off the pages to this point look like they got some stuff to figure out if they want to get to where we think they could be based on the talent that, you know, is on those rosters.
Yeah, I think one of them, I would agree with what you're saying is, you know, and I think that's Texas Tech. Like, they may get to be back in terms of back in the mix, you know, in the Big 12. I mean, I looked last night. I couldn't believe it when I saw that record. The thing with Texas Tech, and I say this very, very, very passionately, is that it's not like they've had these gaudy records. I mean, I think they won 35 games or I think they won 45 games five times in a row. They never scheduled cupcakes. It wasn't that this was this easy schedule and they just won 45 games because they won 45 games. Coach Tetlock has always scheduled this way. And today they're 3-11. So it's not like, you know, oh yeah, well, you know, in the early mid 2000s, they had 45 wins. They were rolling out, you know, super regionals or super regional. I mean, you're talking about a team that was number one, number three. They were a top five RPI team with 45 wins. Like, that's impressive. So they've always scheduled this way. And don't get me wrong, their schedule is very daunting. They went to North Carolina, which for a team from Texas, you don't have to do. They had Arizona come in. You know, they went to Grand Canyon this weekend, but they're getting their doors blown off every time they do all this stuff. And that's, for me, I would say the biggest shocker. The other two that I think are pretty big surprises in terms of should they have the record that they do, and that's Rice. I mean, you're talking about a very, very, very beautiful history. You know, Coach Graham was there for, you know, 50 years, whatever he was. Multiple big leaguers, multiple College World Series appearances. I think they're 2-12 or 2-13. That's very, very, very surprising. You look at their schedule ahead too. I don't know if you can even get to 20 wins there, which is absolutely shocking to me for a place like Rice. And then the other one that I think is a major, major, major disappointment is Pepperdine. You know, Pepperdine, it's in Malibu. I know they had to deal with the fires and stuff like that, but it's an incredible location. It's a phenomenal baseball area. For them to have the record that they do, I think they're 3-12 as well. Those are the three that just come to mind right away, like very, very, very surprising. With the baseball history, the location, the conference, the whole thing, for them to be that bad is extremely disappointing.
Yeah, great call on Pepperdine and Rice. And for those of you who haven't been following college baseball for a long time, go and take a minute and Google Rice and Google Pepperdine and look at what they've been able to accomplish at those places historically. Now, it is worth saying that I think the landscape's very different, but you know, you're talking about, it wasn't long ago when those were blue bloods in places that were consistently pumping out big leaguers. You know, Pepperdine's been in the College World Series. And yeah, I mean, I think those are two that weren't on my radar for the purposes of this conversation, but I'm glad you brought them up. What do you got, Coach Glass? Anybody jump off the page for you?
Yeah, I think the two that for me, and probably a third, but I'll leave you for the third one. You know, the first one would kind of be Oklahoma State. You know, I thought that they would. Now, that said, they have played, you know, they opened with Clemson, Louisville, and Texas at a neutral place and go 1-2, you know, which isn't easy. They have played Tennessee A&M and Mississippi State as well. They went 2-1 that weekend. But I think kind of the lofty, you know, they took two of three this past weekend against Illinois State. They split with Winthrop midweek. You know, they lost to Texas State midweek as well. You know, I think with kind of what everyone was expecting out of Oklahoma State, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do against Dallas Baptist this week. I think they play tomorrow. And then they're into conference play with West Virginia, what it kind of looks like when they get into conference. But being 9-6 right now, I don't necessarily think that was something that I was expecting out of them. And then the other one for me is Miami. You know, I know that they have, you know, they're 11-5, so bear with me for a second. But, you know, they're coming off back-to-back weekend losses to Florida and UConn. You know, UConn went down there and beat them 7-2 and 12-8, and then they ended up winning on Sunday 15-11. And then they got beat up pretty good against Florida. I know it was 6-2 and 6-3, but, you know, those games weren't necessarily as close as those scores indicated. You know, and then Princeton and Niagara on the front end of that schedule for some wins. But, you know, I'm very interested to see what they do in conference. You know, for a program like Miami, I believe they were under 500 last year as a team. You know, and you know, for same kind of thing along the lines of Rice, you know, I think Miami's a little bit better, but you know, Ed, the ACC is no joke from a conference play standpoint. So, you know, they have, I believe this weekend they have Wake rolling into town, or they're going to Wake, and you know, then they got Florida State, then they got North Carolina. You know, we're going to find out over the next 3 weeks kind of what they look like from a baseball standpoint, because, you know, they also have Duke on the schedule, who, you know, got off to a slow start, but also went out to Cal and took two, and then they got Georgia Tech. You know, so that schedule doesn't necessarily get any easier over the course of the next couple of weeks. You know, so I'm interested to see what the Hurricanes look like when we get into conference play here, because I think that it could be a long year for Miami down there.
Yeah, I won't double down on the Texas Tech thing, Jonathan. You hit on that. I'm going to hit on a couple teams out of the Big Ten that I think have disappointed a little bit. You got Nebraska, you know, who was a preseason top 25 team. You know, they're 5-8. Lost 2 out of 3 opening the weekend. I would say that if you're a Nebraska Cornhuskers fan, you're probably not super fired up about what's going on there. Indiana is another one that came into the season with quite a bit of hype, and they haven't, you know, they've got some losses that aren't exactly good losses. You know, they're 7-9. And then I think Rutgers is another one that you throw in that mix. You know, they kind of had a ton of steam 2 years ago and, you know, didn't have a great season last year by, you know, what you may have expected, but, you know, they're 6-9. They lost 2 out of 3 opening weekend as well. So a couple teams in the Big Ten that I think people thought were probably going to be a little bit better than they are at this point. They certainly got some stuff that I'm sure that they're trying to figure out to kind of get back, but Nebraska is the one that really jumps off to me. I think that going into this season, they seem to be kind of the clear-cut favorite in the Big Ten, and right now they just don't look like they're playing really good baseball, and you know, they're gonna need to figure some stuff out here before they get deep into that Big Ten season. And then there's two teams in the top 25 to me that I'm a little surprised by at this point, and I don't think either of them should be ranked at this point. But you got A&M, preseason number one. They're 9-6 right now, which doesn't seem like a terrible record. But when you look at the schedule they played, they don't have a quality win by their standards. And the same thing goes with UVA. You're looking at I think they're 8-7 or 8-6. BC went in there this weekend, took two out of three, really good win for BC. But, you know, by UVA standards, I don't think this is exactly the start that they were looking to have. And given the offensive firepower that they have, and they seem to be making some very un-UVA-like mistakes, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, I'm sure that they're both going to figure it out. But to your point, Keith, you get into conference play in the SEC and the ACC, it doesn't get any easier. So you kind of got to figure it out while you're in the middle of the fire here. And A&M and UVA, you know, two teams that I think were definitely favorites to make it to the College World Series, and certainly were in the mix to be at the top of the two best conferences in college baseball. I think those two teams got a little bit of soul searching to do here and got to figure some stuff out in the coming weeks and try to get this thing back on the right path. A&M's an interesting case because, you know, obviously you lose in the national championship. You have your coaching staff leaves. You know, there's been some turnover there, but I think from a talent perspective, you're ranked number one in the country to start the season for a good reason. You'll be interested in if they can find their footing. Same with UVA. We're really interested to see how they bounce back from, I believe that was the first time BC had won a series in Charlottesville since 2016. So that doesn't happen very often for those guys. So they got some adjustments to make. You know, Coach O'Connor and Coach McMullen and Coach Dickinson at UVA are as good as it gets. So I'm sure that they got a plan to get this ship righted, but they got to figure it out quick because it doesn't get any easier here in the coming weeks.
I think that's a good point, honestly. Like, you look at both of those scenarios, right? Like, both of those teams, and they couldn't be more polar opposite in terms of the coaching staffs, right? Coach O'Connor's been there, won a national championship. He's been the head coach, you know, 20 years or so, however long it's been. It's been a long time since he's been the head coach. He knows how to kind of navigate those waters. And then you look at it on the other side, right, at Texas A&M, and you say, all right, well, Coach Early just got the job. Rockstar assistant. He's been a rockstar assistant for a long time. I mean, his name has been in the mix for some big-time jobs, big-time positions for a long time. Finally gets his opportunity, stays on at Texas A&M. You know, obviously a lot of drama in the summer with, you know, going to Texas, coming back, whatever. First time head coach, though, how does he navigate those waters, right? And you look at both of those scenarios, you know, I think UVA was top 10, but they're both top 10 teams. You know, you hit on Texas A&M was number one, you know, preseason. They're both basically preseason top 10 teams. Both haven't gone off to the start they wanted. UVA obviously lost 2-3 to open ACC play. Texas A&M will open SEC play this weekend. But, again, not to the start that they wanted. And then you look at it, you say, all right, you know, how do these two guys that have had totally different, you know, career trajectories, how do they handle this little bit of, you know, rough waters? And I think that'll be interesting, you know, because – doesn't get any easier in the SEC. Definitely doesn't get any easier in the ACC. So you look at it and you're like, all right, well, here you guys go. Go figure it out. And I think it'll be cool to see the kind of two teams with a ton of preseason hype. How do they navigate that not necessarily best start that they've ever seen?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly put my money on the UVA staff being able to figure this out. But I think you bring up a good point about Coach Early. Like, this is his first time ever doing it. You know, and how do you get those guys to lock back in and kind of play to their potential, right? And I can't say that I've watched them enough to know, you know, exactly why some of this stuff is happening. And you know, sometimes guys, you just don't play well in those moments that you need to play well. And that can be the difference, you know, and it's not like A&M's played a cakewalk schedule, but there's definitely some losses on there that in previous years, you kind of expect them to come away with some wins. So very interesting there. I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. Any players that jump off the page for you? Guys that, you know, are kind of stealing the show in college baseball. I know we've had some superstars in recent years with Skeens and Caglione and, you know, the Rhett Lauder and some of these guys that have kind of really jumped off the page, but anybody that jump off the page for you guys that, that kind of fires you up watching them?
Anyone right now is like that category that you just, you know, said. I think it'll be interesting to see as we get into conference play. You know, I think obviously in the SEC, especially, you have some arms. LSU's obviously got a bunch of offensive guys that can really do it. But it'll be interesting to see, can somebody take that next step in those big moments, right? Like February, you know, it's March 10th, you know, great, like tearing it up. But, you know, can somebody take that next step in SEC play, in ACC play, and kind of separate themselves into, hey, I'm going to be 1-1. I'm going to be a top five pick. And not necessarily just, hey, I've been really good in non-conference play, and I'll kind of see what happens.
Fired up to see this Doyle kid get into the SEC. I mean, you look at that kid's stat line. The only run he's given up all year is a solo home run, and he's only given up one extra base hit outside of that in 20 innings. I mean, he's just carving people right now. And I'm really curious. I'm not curious. I'm excited to watch him throw in the SEC on Fridays. And what is that going to look like? Because up until this point, I mean, the numbers are a joke. He's thrown 20 innings, 20 and a third. He's given up six hits. He's walked five guys, and he's punched 47 dudes. Like, that's ridiculous production. And I'm fired up to watch him on Friday here coming up against, you know, the Arkansas's and the, you know, the LSU's of the world. And what is that going to look like? Because it has a chance to be electric. I mean, think of the guys that have come through the SEC in recent years that have been dominant. And he certainly looks like kind of the next guy in line that has a chance to be that kind of 1-1 dude or top five pick. And he's certainly making a name for himself here early. And then the other guy that I really enjoyed watching is the shortstop from Wake Forest, Merrick Houston. He's had a really cool progression throughout his career, kind of a defense first guy when he first got there, had a nice sophomore year last year. I think he hit about 330 with like seven, maybe eight home runs. But I mean, he's off to a freaking tear right now. I think he's up over 400. I think he's got eight home runs already. They were able to kind of backfill that lineup with some guys and bring in some transfers to give him some protection. And I mean, he's been as good as anybody in the country as far as I'm concerned with what he's been able to do. I'm curious to see how that's going to continue to play out as we get into ACC. And we all know that those at-bats on the weekend get a lot more difficult, a lot more information on you. Probably the arms are better, the pressure is much higher trying to win those conference games. And, you know, if he's able to kind of keep this trajectory, I think you're looking at another guy who's got a chance to go really high in the first round, given kind of the defensive profile. And now that bat has come around. So I'll give a shout out to Coach Soleno at Wake Forest. I talked to him the fall of Merrick's freshman year, and I asked him, I said, who fires you up? He goes, the Houston kid's going to be a first rounder as a junior. And I think Billy might have got that one right. What do you got, Keith? Anybody fire you up?
Sorry, everybody. My computer's slow. I think the one kid, just I've watched a handful of games. The Levi Clark kid out of Tennessee has been, I mean, he's hitting 513 right now. He's got like, I think he's got pushing 40 at bats, six home runs. Like, he's just tearing the absolute cover off the baseball. But again, you know, I think some of the, you know, there's, you can look up, so like the guy who's leading the NCAA is hitting like 575 or something out of Mason, which is absurd. You know, the kind of this deep into the year. So I think a lot of this stuff, as always, is going to even out when you get into conference. But I think that Levi Clark kid, just the numbers he's put up, and you know, some of the games I've watched that Tennessee has played, like, it's, you know, he can change the game with one swing, which, you know, it, when you're playing at that level with those types of players, like that's something that is unique that you see, where it's like, damn, like this game could change right here in the flip of a switch. And, you know, that's, I'm interested to see, you know, how that plays in the SEC from a conference standpoint, but, you know, that kid can roll the pole. You know, but I, you know, the rest of that, you guys took most of the guys that I was going to talk about. So I'll go third and throw that one out there.
I think the thing to note about Clark is you're talking about a freshman, which is wild. And I think we've talked about this in the past, but there's kids getting to campus now that would have never got to campus before. I mean, the amount of freshmen, it seems like there's a handful of guys that at the highest level of college baseball come in as 18-year-olds and are absolute dudes. And he's certainly that guy right now. I mean, the Tennessee offense is a joke. Would they hit three grand slams? One of them was a walk-off grand slam in a 22-9 game against Radford. I mean, that offense is on pace to, if they can keep this up, which it gets a lot harder getting into SEC play, but you're talking about like a historic type of offense, not just like, hey, you're really good this year, but you're talking one of the best offenses in all of college baseball. And they have 49 home runs.
I was going to say they have 49 home runs right now. Like that's, and they're hitting 350 as a team. Like, I don't care who you are. If you're hitting 350 as a team, you got 49 home runs. Like that's an impressive start to a season in over 16 games.
Yeah. The Rocky Top's got a, they got a chance at this again this year. I think it, them being able to bring a legit dude into the front end of that rotation. And it seems like they've retooled from an offensive perspective. I mean, man, they're looking tough right now. Certainly a fun team to watch. A lot of fireworks, and you know, they kind of got it rolling right now. We'll see how that plays out in the SEC. All right. What couple other things I wanted to bring up. There's been some Twitter stuff out there. Jonathan, I know you like to run. I know it's a big part of it, it's something you're a fan of. You got this VMI squad, Virginia Military Institute down in Virginia. They got 90 bags right now. What do we make of this absurdity that they're doing off? And it's, here's the key though. They're winning games, right? Like this isn't a dog and pony show. Like I think they're 12-2 or 13 or 12-3 or something like that. So like they're winning games. It isn't just running necessarily reckless, but I mean, 90 stolen bases in 15 games is wild.
Yeah. I think one of the big things is, you know, like I don't ban anything away from anybody, to be honest with you, but like, and I got these numbers in front of me here. Let me give me a second here.
Have they 103
schedule in the world? No, like let's not get ahead of ourselves here. They have 103 bags. They've only been thrown out 17 times. That's absurd. And again, I don't care who you're playing. I mean, for you to steal 103 bags, I mean, I think somebody said the second highest is like somewhere in like the 50s or 60s. Like you're going to double that.
The next high, this second is Wofford at 52.
I mean, it's over double. Oh, not just short of double. Just short of double. Like one more bag than double. I mean, it's impressive. I mean, they're in 345. I mean, they obviously have a system. You know, maybe they took the Wofford system. Obviously, it's SoCon team. Wofford's been running for, you know, the better part of well over a decade. And they've really created that, you know, that offensive minded running style. But I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I'll be interested to see what they do in SoCon play. But the one thing that I think that we've seen with them, and I think you've seen this with a lot of really good teams that run, is that they're not scared to run. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest things that you see all the time is like when teams have success running, okay, that's great. But when they start to get thrown out, do now all of a sudden pull the e-brake? And in my opinion, from what I've seen, good teams aren't scared to continue to run, and it doesn't appear that that's them. Like, they just keep going. I mean, you go down this list. I mean, you can look at this list. This list is what? They got a guy's got 29 bags. 29, and he's been thrown out four times, which, I mean, that's almost, like, that's a crazy number. Another guy with 14, 9, 29, another guy with 9. I mean, they're basically their starting lineup. The lowest guy's got 3. He's 3 of 5. They got a guy at 16 of 16. Like, they're clearly not scared to run. I think it'll be interesting when they go to SoCon what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you got to account for. Like, it's not your traditional way of doing it in today's college game, you know, where, you know, you're seeing guys try to leave the yard and stuff. But I think it's a good example of maybe kind of adapting to what you can recruit, right? Like, the type of player you can get or the type of players that you have on your roster, and, like, what can you do to win? And the old adage is, like, what can you do to get to second? And for some guys, like, if you can get to first and you're stealing 29 bags in 15 games, like, clearly that guy's pretty good to get in second base too. Like, it's constant pressure. It's really tough to deal with. You go into a series as a pitching staff and you're a pitching coach. When you look at those numbers, like, it affects everything that you do, because now every time you toe the rubber in the stretch, you've got another variable you have to account for.
They got a guy who's he's hitting 260. Okay, he's got 11 hits, but he has 16 bags. So if you think about it, that's basically another 16 bases. That's almost 17 hits. If he had the exact same numbers with 17 hits, because it's 17 extra bags, he would go from 260 to like 420.
And every one of those singles is a double.
Yeah.
I got to think, I don't know what the NCAA record is. Keith's the master at Googling things quickly, so I'm sure we can pull this up. But they got to be, like, that has to be within reach for them, right? I've never seen anything like this. Like, there's teams that have always run. You know, you get to 100, like, 100's a lot. I mean, they're barring a major change in success rate, they're going to clear the 200 mark.
They might clear the 200 mark by Easter at this rate. I mean, like, they got 103. I mean, they're 4X their opponents. That's what's crazy, too, is they're only allowing 25 bags. So they're over 4X what their opponents are. So that means every hit, I mean, they're four times, every time they, it's, yeah. Wofford and F, when Rob was at Fairleigh Dickinson, he put up some crazy number, like in the, I think the mid 200s the one year. But I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't know what their record is, but I mean, they got to be getting, I mean, they're going to be in the area code, you would think.
I'm going to see if I can find this real quick, what the record is.
The all-time record is 191 by Florida State in 1986.
I mean, they're halfway there. We're not even, it's not even the middle of March.
I mean, I got it. If there's a betting line on the over, I would take it.
Like minus 2,000 is the odds.
If DraftKings doesn't have this in their app right now, they need to put it in. They need to put the over-under on breaking that record, and I'll put some money down on that they're going to do it. I mean, barring like a massive change in success and attempts, which to your point, if somebody's on, they're running. I got to think that they – potentially smash that record.
I don't say this lightly, but it's only 88. But if you've had 103 in 16 games, like 88 doesn't seem like that much over the course of 56.
If they keep this pace, they could get to three Bills. Think about that.
Yeah.
How many games in are they? They're what, 15 games in? Dude, I mean, they might get close to 400 at this rate.
They got, if they play all their games, they got 41 more games left on the schedule. And at this rate, let's math this up. We got 103 in 15 games. They're averaging, we'll call it six to lowball it. It's actually closer to seven. It's 6.8 a game. So if you've got 40 more games left, that means they got 240 in the bag that they're waiting to get. Like, you're talking about them clearing the 300 mark. I think they clear 280. I think you set the over-under at 250. That's probably the line. Vegas, get in on this.
Well, yeah, if it's close to seven, you're pushing 280.
So that means they're not scared to continue to get thrown out. Like, they're going to keep going. Like, it's not like they're running at – like, their best guy's been thrown out four times, which he has 30 bags already. 29, whatever. But like every guy's been thrown out like multiple times. So like the system says just keep running. So like, I don't like if you put it at 250 might be too low.
I mean, they have an 86% success rate. So like, you'll take the odds. It's a 14% chance you're going to get thrown out. Like, I'll take the 86% chance every day of the week.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah. Certainly it. Something to watch. I'd be remiss if I didn't at least bring this up, but there was a recent record broken in college baseball for the most runs scored in one inning. George Mason scored 23 runs in one inning, breaking the previous mark. And if you've been on Twitter, this seems to have caught quite a bit of steam. You got Barstool in on it. John Boy probably has the best video ever made, like possibly the best baseball video ever made. It's about 5 minutes long, but it is worth a watch if you've got some time. But you don't see that happen very often. I think it was an accumulation of quite a few different things, but That was also a highlight of the first month of the season, is we saw a pretty wild inning unfold at George Mason here in Northern Virginia. Any thoughts on that, Jonathan? Keith?
Wild. That's all I'll say. Wild.
Wild.
Wild inning.
That's absurd.
The John Boy video is 5 minutes.
I've seen some absurd innings going through some box scores. So that one takes the cake. But I saw one the other day. Today, actually, I was on the phone with Eric, and there was a team who posted a 13 spot in the eighth and still lost by nine. So that was a wild one to kind of look over. You scored 13 in one inning and still lost by like eight or nine. Oh, but geez. Wild.
Yeah, we've also seen a couple sports information offices have to bite their tongues recently. Florida Gulf Coast with the Georgia tweet, and then they end up losing that game. I thought that was kind of funny. So there's been some antics on Twitter, and there's been some funny stuff happening in college baseball, which is all another reason to watch it. There's always good stuff going on. And I know we got some good games coming up this weekend. Some closing thoughts here. Jonathan, anything you're keeping an eye on? Anything you're particularly interested in for the next quarter of the season?
Yeah, I think the big thing is just seeing, you know, how the conference stuff shakes out. You know, who who can kind of right the ship, you know, kind of like what we talked about with, you know, A&M and, you know, UVA is, can some of these teams, you know, kind of get back on track? Texas Tech, for example, A&M, UVA, some of them, you know, can they kind of right the ship? Can they kind of figure it out? You know, and then what does the SEC look like? I mean, you look at these rankings, I mean, you're talking about over half the league is ranked in the top 25. Like, you know, what does that look like when we get, you know, kind of down to the nitty gritty here? Alabama, I think, is, you know, a good one that you brought up. I think Auburn's another one. You know, what are they like at the end of the year? I don't think Missouri's going to be a player at all. I think they've kind of showed their card of who they actually are. But, I mean, the rest of that league, I mean, you know, I think those two are question marks. I think both Mississippi's are question marks, you know, in the SEC. But everybody else in that league is going to be really good, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how it shakes out. Like, who ends up being a host? Who's a national host? Like, all that kind of stuff. And then the other part for me to kind of continue to monitor, and I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, is what does it look like with that ACC travel schedule? You know, how much does that play a part in what do these teams look like? You know, Stanford obviously going across the country to North Carolina to have to play. Clemson's going to have to go to across the country to a Stanford. What does that look like at the end of the year with all that, you know, bi-coastal travel? And what is that? How much does that affect those teams at the end of the year? You know, when you get down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah, early travel would say put your money on the road team if they're flying across the country. Yeah, Duke taking 2 out of 3 in North. I have a hard time thinking that that's going to hold up, but certainly something that's very interesting to track. You get a little bit of that in the Big Ten too. Like at some point, somebody from the East Coast is going to have to go out west to Washington and UCLA and USC. Be interesting to see how that plays out. Coach Glass, what do you got? Any things we need to keep an eye out for?
Not really. I mean, I'm going to echo Jonathan. I think I'm very interested to see, as I was when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, what travel looks like, you know, in the Big Ten and the ACC more specifically with teams going east and west all year long. You know, the first weekend, I think, is, you know, it's kind of like college football and the NFL. It's always a lie, you know, so I'm interested to kind of see what happens with multiple teams going west and east over the course of weekends and, you know, going from, you know, Scataway, New Jersey out to Oregon to Eugene and seeing what that looks like. And, you know, the North Carolina teams going to the Bay Area and playing at Cal and Stanford. You know, it's, we've never seen it before. So I think it's incredibly interesting to kind of, you know, lock in on and see what that looks like. But, you know, I think it's going to ultimately have broader implications on things because I think that you can, you know, if you go out west or you go east and you're winning series and, you know, you're getting sweeps or going 2-1, like I have to think that that's got a weigh on committee's mind at the end of the year, right? Like, you know, it's not like you drove a bus 5 hours down and took 3 games from USC. Like you got on a plane and went 5 hours across the country and swept Stanford in at Sunken Diamond. Like that, I feel like that might be, you know, big keys for some of the ACC teams when they get into the postseason type arguments with being hosts or 2 seeds or 3 seeds or even really getting in. So, you know, that's probably the biggest thing for me is just watching that. And I think the second one is just seeing what mid-majors start to shake out over the course of the next couple of weeks when we get into conference play. Like, you know, I think some of those mid-major conferences are going to be kind of top heavy for the reasons we talked about at the front end of the show. But, you know, I'm interested to see what Northeastern and Charleston do in the CAA. And, you know, Santa Barbara's a team we haven't talked about. That's, I think they're sitting 12 or 13-3 right now. And, you know, they got dudes on the mound and they're playing really good baseball right now. Like what do they look like in 10 weeks at the end of conference? So, you know, I think the travel and then kind of what mid-majors really start to shake out of being really good that could potentially be at large bids to, to steal some spots from some of these bigger schools and bigger programs as the season wears on.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to add to that. I think that's a huge talking point here for the as we get into conference play. I like your note about the CAA, Keith, and I think it's really interesting because I think the bottom of that conference this year is probably as bad as it's been in a long time. And if you're Northeastern and Wilmington and Charleston, who year in and year out are regional type teams, does the strength of that conference come back to bite them again? Right. Like we saw it with Charleston. Wilmington was able to win the conference. Northeastern, you know, kind of did it to themselves at the end of last year. They probably just needed to win a game, maybe two in the conference tournament, and they get that at-large bid. But, you know, if you go on the road and you slip up against Towson, like that might be the difference for teams like that. I think all three of those teams are regional quality teams, but given kind of some of the teams at the bottom of the conference right now, I think it'll be really interesting to see if they're able to get some of those good midweek wins, right? Like Wilmington's got a couple of them already. Charleston's is, you know, they're going to play South Carolina and Clemson. And like, can you go get a midweek win against one of those teams and maybe offset the bottom of that conference? Same thing with Northeastern. Can you go and can you beat UConn? Can you beat a Kansas State? You know, can you go in and beat BC? Like, can you get those wins that might get you into the conversation at the end of the year? And then the other one I'm looking at is I have no idea what to make of the Big Ten. I have no idea what to make of it. I think there's a bunch of teams in the middle of that conference that are probably better than their record show right now. And then I'm also really interested to see, like, Penn State might be really good. And are you talking about, like, one of the better two-year turnarounds in recent memory? You know, from a team that was kind of an afterthought in the Big Ten for a long time to they look like they're a serious contender in that conference, somebody that could potentially win that regular season. And, you know, obviously Coach Gambino and Coach Puccio are both really good at what they do. You know, and there's other guys on that staff I'm missing. You know, Coach Wheels, who's been around for a long time and is a really, really good baseball guy. But if they could win that conference, like you're talking about a pretty major turnaround in an awesome story for a program that for the most part hasn't had a lot of success there. So I think that that's cool. And I'm just curious how that does Maryland get in the mix again? Is Indiana better than what they've shown so far? Like, does Nebraska figure it out? Like, I think there's a bunch of teams in there that really haven't gotten to what I think we expect them to do. And I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. Any other thoughts? Anything else you guys want to add? All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We'll have another college baseball roundup here in a couple weeks. See if we got anything right. We'll survey the scene once again and see if we can't unpack some stuff. But in the meantime, go watch it. D2, D3 is fully underway. Some great baseball there, so be sure to track that. So listen in next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMDBaseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on EMDBaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.